Founded in 1729, Arlington Street continues today as a gathering place for progressive people of faith in the greater Boston area and beyond. We are located at the corner of Arlington and Boylston Streets, across from the Public Garden in Boston, Massachusetts. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.
Many of you might be familiar with the Reddit forum called Leopards Ate My Face. For those who don't know, the idea behind the group is, I never thought they'd eat my face, sobs a woman who voted for the Leopards Eating People's Face party. The forum is full of news stories about shocked Trump voters saying, I never thought they'd cut my Medicaid, I never thought he'd arrest the migrant workers on my farm, or I never thought he'd put tariffs on my industry. And I confess, reading them is delicious. It's pure weapons-grade schadenfreude injected directly into your veins. You want to shout in their faces, sorry your life is so messed up. At least we can ignore people's pronouns, right? Sorry you lost your Medicaid, but at least we don't have a black woman as president. It feels so good. But it also makes me feel a little bad. Because we come to this church where the only gospel is love. And when I read these stories, it doesn't feel like love. It feels a little bit like revenge. And on the road from here to beloved community, there is no town called revenge. The thing is, we're in a big mess, and the people in those stories aren't wrong. There is a big conspiracy against them. There are nefarious actors looking to oppress them and create a world that doesn't respect them or their rights. And Donald Trump agreed with them. And for many of these folks, it was the first time a politician acknowledged their pain without a 17-point plan for increasing employer contributions to their 401k or a proposal for a study group to find the root cause of why family farms are going bankrupt. Trump just told them, you're right, they hate you, they're out to get you, but I can fix it. And my proposal is, we round up all these jerks that hate you, kick them in the ass, and voila, a new golden age of American exceptionalism. We'll turn back the clock to a better time that never existed, but you'll recognize it from reruns of Leave It to Beaver and the Brady Bunch. It's a simple pitch that's easy to fall for. It has a strange elegance and simplicity. Things like economics and foreign policy are hard to understand. Bureaucrats want to make you drive a Prius is easy. Trans people are dangerous is easy. Immigrants are stealing our welfare is easy. But it turns out trans people aren't the ones keeping our wages low, it's the insanely wealthy people. And immigrants getting food assistance isn't why your kid's school has no money, it's because this country prioritizes billionaire tax cuts over your child's education. These are hard truths that you won't find on Fox News or CNN or even NBC, because they're all mouthpieces for the wealthy and powerful. At least we still have PBS and NPR. Oh wait, we took away their money 2 weeks ago. So that's how a racist, rapist billionaire, the son of a racist millionaire, became the supposed champion for the working class and downtrodden, despite a lifetime of evidence to the contrary. That's where we are today. It stinks, but that's where we are today. And instead of grabbing these Trump voters by the shoulders and shaking them, we are called to love them and love them unconditionally. Because that's what we do, and it's the only thing we can do. That's why we talk about the inherent worth and dignity of every person, because it's so easy to forget. The great psychologist and humanist philosopher Erich Fromm said, there is perhaps no phenomenon which contains so much destructive feeling as moral indignation, which permits envy or hate to be acted out under the guise of virtue. So I need to be careful when I read about leopards eating people's faces, because my moral indignation is a poor substitute for love, and moral indignation is what Trump offers us. The love that Trump offers people isn't unconditional. It's not even conditional, It's worse, it's transactional. And of course, that's not really love at all. Brené Brown is familiar to many of us because her writing is very accessible, her values align nicely with us as UUs, and she spends time thinking about loving community in ways few people can. But in 2019, more than 2 years into the first Trump administration, she had a big problem. There had been a mass shooting in El Paso, Texas, and then another one 13 hours later in Dayton, Ohio. As someone who cares deeply about love and community, Brené was emotionally overwhelmed. She was shocked to the point of numbness, and it persisted. She says, "After 3 weeks of feeling untethered and increasingly hollowed out, I realized something more serious was happening than the usual exhaustion or burnout. I couldn't access hope or possibility. I poisoned every good thing with thoughts of potentially horrible things. I didn't want to let my family out of my sight, but I didn't feel I had much to offer them, even when they were within arm's reach." I think most of us have been where Brené Brown was. That feeling of floating in space when we're faced with terrible news, the feeling of loss that comes from seeing the world turn into something less than what you thought it was. Fortunately, Brené was able to diagnose the problem with a little help from bell hooks. She was suffering from lovelessness. She explains, "The world is suffering from traumatic levels of lovelessness right now. But what really brought me to my knees these past few months was how susceptible I was to perpetuating lovelessness in my own response to our collective pain. As I started to untangle everything I was feeling, I realized that over the past few months, I had unknowingly turned away from love, the only fuel source that really works for me. Instead of being fueled by love, I unconsciously had turned to fear, contempt, self-righteousness, and maybe a touch of high-octane disdain to navigate these hard times and hard people." Well, I think she hit the nail right on the head. Contempt and self-righteousness are totally understandable, yet self-destructive responses to the world we're living in. So the problem was diagnosed. What were the next steps? She came up with a list of things to help her get love back on track. And here are just a few of them. "I can be skittish when it comes to inviting joy and grace into my life. Joy fuels love. Grace allows me to reflect. I need to find a way to open that door more often, even when it feels so vulnerable." Even though there are a million things that need to change, we all need to rest sometime, even when there's a metric ton of work to do. Burnout drives lovelessness. "And I need to make sure my anger is a catalyst born of love, not justification for causing pain when I'm in pain." Friends, we need to love like Brené Brown loves. Some have said that dogs are mankind's greatest invention. And I know some would argue that we are dogs' greatest invention. We transformed wolves into dogs in a project that started between 20 and 40,000 years ago and continues today. We had dogs before we had the wheel. We had dogs before we had agriculture. What started as a marriage of convenience between two species has become something of a love affair. Art and I got our dog, Spencer, in 2015. He was about 2.5 years old, black lab mix, and a rescue from down south. He had just finished treatment for heartworms. Many of you here today have probably seen him walking around church sometimes. We called him our church lady dog because of how much he loved being here. Despite a rough start to his life, we had 10 amazing years with him before we had to say goodbye this past April. I've been reflecting on what it was like to live with Spencer, what lessons were learned, unlearned, or reinforced. I learned that it's possible to love another dog after my last dog was so amazingly perfect. I unlearned the notion that providing care and comfort to someone needs to be a burden. And Spencer reinforced the idea that it's okay to love something you know you'll lose someday. The writer Erica John once said, "Dogs come into our lives to teach us about love. If you've ever had a good relationship with a dog, you know that they're just bottomless pits that you can pour all your love into and have it reflected back times 10 every day. The love they give us is unconditional and it's pure." One of Spencer's best days was probably a trip he took with Art, Reverend Beth, and myself. We took the ferry over to Provincetown for the day. He was not a big fan of the bouncy gangplank to get up to the ship, but once we were on board, he was in heaven. We sat at a booth on the ferry with Art and Beth on one side of the table and Spencer and I on the other side. He was sitting at the table with us for the first time in his life. People were milling around, kids were coming up to pat him, snacks were abundant, and the experience was brand new to him, a boat, the water. He was truly, unmistakably happy. He soaked in the love, unfiltered, without wondering if he was worthy, without worrying about people's motivations, and he radiated love outwards like a furnace radiates heat. Spencer welcomed the stranger, all strangers. Everyone was treated like an old friend the very first time he met them. And he also saw the inherent worth and dignity in every person. He didn't even have to work at it like we do. It was his nature. And it occurs to me that maybe one of the reasons we've stuck with this dog experiment for so many millennia is that they are what we are only striving to be. It makes me think, could it be that love is our true nature too? Have we just put so many layers and conditions and constraints on ourselves that we've actually turned the very real basic emotion of love into something abstract? Shame on us. We need to love like a dog loves. Recently, a longtime friend of this church, Krista Lamb, had a fantastic Facebook post about a rabbit living in her yard. With her permission, I'm going to share it with you. So this bunny has been living in my yard for a month and a half, and I've enjoyed watching it grow. Many of you have seen the videos of how close it lets me get, how gentle it's been, and how something seemed off today. When I opened the back door to the garage to bring the lawnmower in, there it was, and it didn't run. Its eyes weren't opening fully. It seemed slow and tired, and I knew something wasn't right. I was able to gently pick it up and bring it inside. I reached out to every local wildlife rehabilitator I could. Everyone is either full or unavailable. The only option is Tufts Wildlife Clinic, and they open at 8 a.m. So I'll be driving it there first thing tomorrow morning and trusting them to decide what's best. It might not make it through the night. It's more than likely in the end stages of toxoplasmosis. But I've done what I can. I've given it warmth, safety, clover, grass, water, and quiet. And the greatest gift I could give it was to let it know it's love. It's loved. And I know it felt that. The gift it gave me was the reminder that in this world, with everything going on, I still have my heart. I still love. That part of me is still here, and I'm not letting it go. This is a gift I will carry in my heart whenever I remember little Alex. The next morning, she gave us this sad update. Alex, the cottontail rabbit, didn't make it through the night. When I found her in the early morning light, she was lying peacefully in the grass and clover clippings. She had simply gone to sleep. I planted these flowers for her, along with some basil and parsley, because I know she would have loved to snack on them. This little garden marks her grave, right near the spot where she used to hang out. Just behind it was the brush where she made her little den. My dog Kirby would always try to sniff her out and keep her on her toes, but she was quick and clever. I framed a photo of her so she'll always have a place here. It felt right to fill this space with beauty and the things she loved. Friends, we need to love like Krista Lamb loves. When you love something, it's not a distraction from what's happening. It's not a pacifier we put in our mouths to keep us busy while the world sorts itself out. It isn't a retreat inside our heads while we wait for these times to pass. Rather, love is the way out. Loving one another is the thing that will make these times pass. And loving one another is what will allow us to rebuild what we're in the process of losing. I can't tell you what this world or this country will look like when Donald Trump is nothing but a lingering stench on our history. But if we get through it, when we get through it, it will be because we loved each other and we loved the world. Amen, and blessed be. And now for our benediction, I invite you to put your hands over your heart in namaste. I bow to the divine in you. Here's a little more wisdom from Brené Brown. I'm going to live into my values and stand up for what I believe in from a place of love. And I'm not talking about rainbow and unicorn love. I'm talking about learning how to stay fueled by a gritty, dangerous, wild-eyed, radical, change-the-world kind of love when disdain, judgment, and contempt are so much easier and when fear is seducing me into staying quiet. Love, belonging, connection, and joy are irreducible needs for all of us. We can't give people what we don't have. We have to live love to give love. Let us keep this faith, beloveds, and pass it on. The service begins when the service ends. Amen.
We are located at the corner of Arlington and Boylston Streets, across from the Public Garden in Boston, Massachusetts. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.